This is Peter Tubbs of Market to Market. The following discussion is driven by your comments and questions. Keep sending your inquiries to markettomarket@iowapbs.org and watch on our YouTube channel or Facebook page of Market to Market Show.
This is the Friday, March 5th, 2021 version of the Market Plus segment. And joining us is Sean Hackett. Back for more discussion.
Back for more, Brooke. Back for more.
That's right. Hey, I'm ready. Okay. So last week, you're well aware of some comments that were made by one of our analysts. Sue made a pretty bullish prediction about where prices are headed. What kind of outlook do you have for the next couple of years and strategy for producers?
Sure. I will remind everyone that on my debut on Market to Market, I made an $8 corn forecast for 21-22 based upon China being the largest importer of corn in the world, which they are, inflationary fears coming back, which they have, and extremely increases in volatility of weather, which we're starting to see. So I still hold to that forecast that, you know, whether we'll have a good shot of seeing kind of a retest of those 2008-2012 highs. The other thing that we did, as you may have seen, is that we went back to 1860. And we did an analysis of all these phase transitions. Phase transitions are where you go from one price level in grains to another because of an imbalance. And we found that the average phase transition, which we believe we're in, by the way, we believe we're in a phase transition, takes 2.5 years. If it began in the spring of last year, that would put us in spring, summer of 22 for the time frame for a blow-off phase transition top. We also looked back, well, how much did prices typically move during these phase transitions? And they typically moved up 4 times where they started. So for example, if corn was 3, it would go to 12. If soybeans were 8, it would go to 32. That was an average. The low point was 3 times. The high point was 4.8 times. And this is going back to 1860, and there were 10 phase transitions that we analyzed. So these are statistics, right? We don't know for sure exactly what this phase transition will do. But I will remind everyone about Minneapolis wheat. In 2008, when it went to $25 a bushel, unimaginable. Anyone would have thought you should be fired as a grain analyst if you even thought about predicting that in 2005 and 2006. And yet it happened. And I believe in the environment we're in right now with crazy weather coming and everything else, we could see some unimaginable prices. And I think Sue's probably, as independent a thinker as she is, probably thinking along those lines that we might see some of those crazy, crazy prices that in hindsight, you know, maybe we should have been more thinking about. And so, you know, that's kind of where we come from. We're very bullish. Our overall recommendation on this program and past and to our customers is this: store as much cash grain as you can, sell what you have to. We think cash basis is going to go crazy to the upside over the next 12 to 18 months, maybe even exceeding those in 2012. And we would be very, very light on making cash sales for new crop corn and new crop soybeans. We just think that those discounts in those deferred contracts are unjustified. And we think we don't want the producer to make a mistake by selling corn and soybeans too cheap for a second year in a row that many did last year. And so that's a recommendation. And so we're kind of along the lines of Sue being pretty bullish. I'm not sure I'm, you know, exactly on the price level she mentioned, but I can certainly appreciate where she came from on that.
All right, a lot to unpack there. Thanks, Sean. Let's get to social media. So Philip writes in, and he asks, does the August 25th, 2020 gap on the corn chart at 366 ever have to get filled before new highs above historic top? It was 849 on August 10th of 2012.
We don't have to fill gaps. I mean, you know, there's a, you know, the chartists like to have gaps filled because they feel it's unfinished business and that sort of thing. The days that we have, you know, trading on the floor, those gap fills were more common to fill. But nowadays, we're involved in this electronic trading, algorithmic trading. Those gaps don't fill anywhere near as much as I used to. And we just don't think that that is something that has to happen. It could happen, but we don't think it has to happen, and we don't think it's going to happen. So,
okay, there's your answer, Philip. All right, so Aaron writes in, and he's asking, cattle prices might shoot up next winter, but what are they going to do between now and this fall?
Well, I think we touched upon this a little bit in the main show, that we still think we can have a runway to some higher prices here into the spring before we get worried about a high corn price, a high feed price, causing herd liquidation into the fall, which would then depress the price. So we kind of feel good about moving into April, May, and June maybe, but we get really, really concerned because this June, July, we expect it to be a major drought cycle for corn. And those corn prices go up, we don't think livestock producers are going to pay to keep feeding those animals, and the liquidation cycle begins. And so we would be pretty unfavorable to cattle prices from, let's say, late spring into the fall.
Okay. Roger in Blooming Prairie, Minnesota, he is asking on Twitter, what is a sign or two that we are close to a top or that the top is in for the corn and soybean market?
There's always two things that we always try to look at looking for major tops. First of all, we would like to look for cash basis weakening in a rising market. So usually in a bullish market, the cash market gains on the futures like we've been seeing, right? So that means there's a scarcity of supply. But we see the corn market starting to go up, for example, but the cash is not following. It's widening out. That's a big problem that you might have a demand side problem kicking in. Second thing, we don't like to see declining open interest. So if the corn market's going up, for as an example, and the open interest is falling, it's showing that money's actually coming out of the corn market on a rally when it's supposed to be going into it. And the last thing is we have what's called a smart money algorithm that we created that looks over capital flows. And if we were to get a really strong, what we call a level 5 sell signal that has been very, very, you know, strong in causing indications of sell signals of tops in corn or soybeans or wheat in the past, if we got that, then that would be another sign. So those are the three key factors we'll be looking for as an amalgamation of things to say, hey, we might want to get a little more aggressive with these sales. Maybe this is the time to go out and sell that new crop or sell the next year's crop. We'll be looking for those signs right now. And right now, none of them are in place.
Okay. Got it. All right. We're going to hear from Cody. So he wants to know, how will potential renewable diesel quota affect ethanol-dense states like Iowa?
Well, there's this whole idea of, you know, we're moving away from fossil fuel. I mean, but when we really analyze how fast that's going to come in and when all these alternatives are going to come in, which, by the way, this renewable diesel, which doesn't need to be blended in, by the way, it just goes to the refinery straight in. These are all substitutes, right? It's all going to be trying to replace gasoline demand. But we don't see gasoline demand peaking until about 2030, even with all these factors moving, taking demand away. Demand's going to slow, but we're not going to actually see a downswing in demand for gasoline until 2030, the way we look at it, what our research says. So because of that, you know, we don't think that any of these alternatives like this renewable diesel is going to make a major impact to an ethanol-centric state like Iowa. We think the bigger issue is if corn prices get too high and we can't afford to make the ethanol at the ethanol plant, you know, that's going to be more of an issue for Iowa than whether or not, you know, these quotas are in place for renewable diesel.
Okay. Well, speaking of fuel, where do you see oil prices going?
It's kind of a double-edged sword. We know the vaccines are coming in. We know more and more people are starting to get a little more comfortable to get out and about and around. Gasoline, that's good for gasoline demand. So that, through the demand side factor, post-virus is going to be strong. At the same time, we also know that Middle East, OPEC, have been keeping the supply constrained. So we look at their concept of they don't want the U.S. to become this massive producer like they were a few years ago. We're record-setting production. I think they want to keep us in check. $70 a barrel, maybe low 70s. We don't think they will let that market get any higher if they can help it. And I think they'll put on the floodgates of production and keep the market capped. So that means from where we are right now, maybe another $5 a gallon higher or, you know, a barrel higher. But probably most of the upside is behind us because of that reason.
At what point, though, will that impact oil prices? Where will it have to go for it to possibly have an impact on economic growth?
When we look at the world, when we look at, we're still very fragile, even though things are improving. I mean, very, very fragile, the global economy still is. We think if we got materially over $75 a barrel, then we have a negative effect, meaning that the price now starts to take away from disposable income, not only here, but elsewhere, and that does more damage to global economic growth than the help that it does to the oil-centric countries and to those that produce a lot of oil. So we would look at 75 as the line in the sand, shall we say, before it does more harm than help.
Okay. All right. Good place to end. Thank you, Sean, for joining us on Market Plus. All right. For the next 2 weeks, we will be part of an important part of public television. It is pledge time. So if you value the work done on this program, please consider supporting the work we do with a financial contribution to your local PBS station. Paul Yeager returns next week, and he will be joined by Don Rose to break down the markets, and we will check out the long-term effect of damage done by the snowstorms that hit the winter vegetable crop. Thanks for watching us, and have a great week.